What's up, everybody? Welcome back to The Real Rundown. I'm your host, Bruno. I'm here with the sexy beast, Scott and Pedro. What's up, guys?
What's up, man?
I did not sign off on that name, but I guess we'll go with it.
You guys are sexy beasts. We're in the UK trend today.
I'm glad we're going retro to the early 2000s. That was, in my opinion, a really good period for indie movies and all this stuff.
A lot of good indie British movies.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
Good, man. Good.
No updates? How's life?
Life stuff happening.
That's always good.
2024 is kicking off with a lot of life stuff. So I'm looking forward to later this year.
Big announcements?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. TBD. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling like I sound better because we got some upgrades going on.
Do we? Oh, yeah, we
audio upgrades.
So we got some audio upgrades. We purchased a few microphones, so we should all sound even better than we sounded before. So hopefully the two people listening are having a better experience today.
And if we don't sound better, you can keep your comments to yourself.
It's pleasure on your ears until Scott gets 2 centimeters away from his mic.
Yeah, I don't know why you do that, Scott. You like dive in.
You mean like this?
Yes.
You sound better than ever.
Okay.
Guys, I got some good news. The AMC website crashed.
That's awesome. Was it the website or their app?
You know what? I don't know. I'd have to call IT to get the specifics, but
like, is that like, are people actually going to like AMC.com to buy tickets? People still do that?
Apparently so, because when Dune 2 went on sale, it crashed the website and sold out. Well, I don't want to say sold out because they got plenty of seats, I'm sure. But
didn't they have people using the website like before the pandemic, or they just decided to downgrade the amount of traffic they expect to come and they decreased it?
They might have laid off IT or the guys working from home were in the kitchen making a sandwich because the website crashed, which is good for AMC. You know, that means they're going to get some foot traffic when the movie hits theaters. And that means if you buy a ticket, you're not going to be alone in the theater like I was when I went to see The Equalizer. But I think it's good. People are going to the movies again.
That's a good sign, man. That's a good sign. I'm surprised they're going in droves to see this because, I mean, it's been a long time since Dune 1. I didn't realize it was still on people's radars like that. But yeah, it says that it went on sale on Friday. And at 11 a.m. on Friday, the site traffic, I'm looking at a chart for the site traffic, just like shot up like through the roof and crashed the site.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised to hear that. It's like when bookstores came back all of a sudden, but that's great news. Another cool thing that I read, you know, also related to AMC, they're partnering with A24. They're going to bring four A24 movies back to probably select theaters for like a pre-Valentine's Day event. So they're bringing Pearl, A Ghost Story, The Lobster, and The Lighthouse. And then you get like some promotional like stickers and things like that.
That's cool. A24's like marketing team is doing a great job because they seem to be doing a lot of partnerships with a lot of different people. Like they just cut the HBO deal, right? They had cut the deal with Showtime previously. Now they're cutting a deal with AMC, partnering up with them. So their marketing team is doing stuff to get out there.
And I think they know their audience is people who go to the movies, I think.
Oh yeah.
Right.
They have that cinephile viewership on lock right now.
Yeah, they do. So they're a great partner, and it's good that AMC kind of saw that, or, you know, however that deal occurred, that they kind of saw that as an opportunity to get more people to go to the theaters, because July 14 is coming up, and maybe like 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, it would have been movie theaters packed with like romantic comedies, and I can't think of a single romantic comedy that's coming.
Wait, you mean February 14th? You said July 14th.
My bad. Yeah, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Usually people go to see a romantic comedy.
There was always one or two rom-coms out for that day, I remember.
Yeah. What's that movie, Gray?
50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah, that thing was like bonkers when it came out, and it came out around Valentine's Day, I'm pretty sure. But now I don't know what's coming out around Valentine's Day other than these movies. The new Roadhouse trailer dropped. Pedro, I sent this in the group. Scott, you radio silent, but Pedro was upset. Pedro with the infamous, who asked for this?
My first reaction to the trailer
Why are you upset? Explain.
I'm not upset, but my first reaction was my infamous, who asked for this line? Because I didn't know there was a big demand for a remake of Roadhouse.
There isn't. I don't think there is a big demand for a remake of Roadhouse.
But I guess tapping into that audience that has seen the movie and liked it are like, oh, they're remaking it? Why not? Because, you know, it's one of those movies that it's beloved and, you know, it's been a long time and people want more, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it wasn't a huge movie when it came out. I remember seeing it. I don't know if I ever saw it from beginning to end because it was one of those movies that was always on TV when I was home like Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon. It was just on one of the local channels. Starring Patrick Swayze. He plays like not a bouncer, but he kind of like manages security at a roadhouse, basically. And this one is similar to Jake Gyllenhaal. He plays like a former UFC fighter who also like manages security at this bar in the Florida Keys, I think it is. The
action scenes are cool. It's funny because when I first hit play on the trailer, all I'm seeing is like fighting footage, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is doing another movie where he's like an MMA fighting fighter movie or something. And then I thought, is this like a biopic for a UFC fighter? And then it just turns into a Roadhouse.
Yeah. I got to admit, I'm pretty pumped. So this movie, I think, is going straight to Amazon Prime, I want to say.
It's Amazon Prime.
It's not getting a theater release. So I'm definitely going to check it out. And it's coming out soon. It does look good. Stylized. Colin McGregor is in it. He plays kind of like, not the villain, but he plays, you know, the main nemesis, but there's like a villain who's like, you know, the boss, working with McGregor's character, who's also a famous guy. Scott, pull up his name. His name is like Tegger McGregor. He's one of those like English, I want to say he might be English. You know who this guy is. You've seen him and stuff. If you were on Twitter last week, I'm not going to call this thing X.com because it just sounds dumb. But
yeah, I don't think anyone says X.
People say
it's X, formerly known as Twitter.
That's how it's officially quoted in articles. But like, yeah. I'm talking about when people are speaking, nobody says X.
I don't think anyone says it because they're not really doing that much activity on it.
I'm following, you know, movie and TV industry, and I follow like three topics on Twitter: TV, film, soccer transfers and highlights, and the Knicks. What's going on with the Knicks? 8 wins in a row, baby. But in the movie vertical, Dave Patel dropped a movie trailer. I think it's his directorial debut. Apparently, he had some issues picking up distribution because it portrays some Indian government in a negative light or something. But Jordan Peele saw the trailer saw the movie at a screening and decided to pick it up and produce it and put it out.
Nice.
It looks pretty badass. And I think that might be a Netflix movie. Not 100% sure.
Trailer looks sick, man.
It looks really good. It looks really good.
The trailer's sick. One thing I'll say off the bat real quick, it's 3 minutes and 18 seconds. And that's my problem with trailers nowadays is they're way too long. I don't know what happened to like the minute and a half, 2 minute trailers, but they just give so much of the movie away.
It's going to be in theaters.
Okay, good.
April 5th.
Scott, Pedro, I agree. I don't watch a ton of trailers because they do give too much away.
What I saw in this trailer looked great, man. It's like Dev Patel is, he's like John Wick, but like,
yeah,
but like a sort of like Muay Thai fighter at the same time.
Yeah, and that's all I need to know.
Exactly. Like, I don't need to see like a lot of the story arc, but I just need to see that in the visuals. Like, there's like some sick lighting. There's some, yeah, you know, cool action shots.
Great use of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like kind of got a little throwback feel from that. It felt like a lot of like early 2000 vibes where there was a lot of green color correction and greens added and stuff. So
it looks good. So I'm glad those two trailers dropped because I'm pretty pumped about both.
Monkey Man, keep an eye out for it. Monkey Man, great title too.
Yeah, by Monkey Paw Productions, I think. I think that's what, yes, Jordan Peele's, right? Something like that. Mm-hmm.
I looked up the movies that are being released during, because you were wondering what was coming out.
Valentine's Day.
So it's an interesting array that there's a Gloria Gaynor, I Will Survive documentary being released on February 13th. And the Bob Marley movie, One Love, is okay, the 14th. Madam Web is on the 14th. What About Love is coming out on the 14th.
Sounds like a rom-com.
And that's with Sharon Stone and Andy Garcia and a few
other...
Interesting.
Is it 1994?
Yeah, well...
And then the 16th, then we go out of that to No Way Up, which has a picture of a shark and a plane that looks like it's about to crash.
Okay, so it sounds like there's one rom-com coming out.
Yeah, is it a rom-com or is this a drama? Sharon Stone, Andy Garcia, Ian Glenn. Yo, Ian Glenn. Okay.
It's a romance. It's drama, romance is the genre.
Okay. All right, well, there's something. So
it's within that.
Something's keeping the spirit alive, the tradition.
Yeah, there's a little bit there. And then just the last little bit of news that I was excited about is that Jon Stewart's coming back to The Daily Show. They were forever looking for a host. They couldn't commit to one. So he's coming back. He's going to host on Mondays, and I think only until the end of the year. And then they're going to have like a rotation for the rest of the week. It's a little bit confusing.
What happened to the last host, Trevor Noah? Is he just, his contract expired or something?
He decided to move on. He moved on.
Okay.
Scott, what was your takeaway? Jon Stewart coming back. You're the late night guy here.
I must say, the only episode I watched of Jon Stewart doing The Daily Show was probably his last episode. I don't really watch. I think the last time I also watched it was when, was it Stephen Colbert? Did he do?
No, Stephen Colbert had his own show after Jon Stewart called The Colbert Report.
So I did not watch, that's what I thought. So I didn't watch The Daily Show. But now I will probably watch it because I want to see what he's going to talk about because he's on for the limited time. I will think of it as my last week tonight with John Oliver, but it's going to be his version of it coming back.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Jon Stewart and The Daily Show. You know, now that he's on, he's going to cover the election. That's the only thing he's basically going to cover, I would imagine.
But how is he going to cover it? Because didn't Jon Stewart play a character on The Daily Show? So is he
going back? No, Colbert played the character.
Oh, Colbert played a character. See how much I know about this?
Yeah.
So, yes. So Jon Stewart I think that he was, like, desperate for a platform to want to, you know, speak on things. And this is his opportunity to have that.
He was on Apple. They kind of sort of, if you want to call it censoring, they sort of censored him.
People didn't even know he was on Apple. He could have had a larger audience standing on the corner on any New York City street.
Yeah,
I
didn't know he was on Apple TV Plus until the news came out that he was being let go or something from it. So
those shows, John Oliver, Daily Show, all those night shows, they get a lot of their views from the next day on YouTube. And that's kind of how I started watching John Oliver too on Apple, was just, you know, initially it was clips on Twitter, and then I for longer, more in-depth segments, I would go to YouTube, and then sometimes I would watch on Apple. But yeah, I think The Daily Show is probably going to be similar, because of YouTube. I think stuff is just going to be on the internet, and
they'll post clips, but then Paramount will hope that people subscribe to Paramount Plus and watch the whole episode there.
That's right. He's on the Paramount roster. Yeah.
Yes.
Free agent, scooped him up. I don't know. I guess it's just a 1-year deal until they figure out what they want to do with the host. I think they should just maybe just cancel the show or to come up with something new. All right, should we move on to the main topic?
Let's do it, man. Retro episode time. Choof, 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 choof.
I want to... Quick sidebar. Are you guys caught up on True Detective?
I am, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I believe I'm caught up, except I didn't watch the Sunday episode. But I didn't...
So you're not caught up?
Well, I didn't know there was a pre... I don't have HBO Live, so I watch it. I'm not currently up to date.
So the answer is no.
No, because I unfortunately I had other Sunday stuff I was watching.
All right.
So you didn't watch episode 3 then? Is what
No, wasn't there like football stuff going on Sunday?
There was football stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there was some football stuff going on.
All right. I'm all caught up. I watched the 3rd. So if you didn't watch it, we don't have to spend too much time on it. How are you guys feeling about the show?
Stranger and stranger.
Yeah. I had my gripes with episode 2. I didn't like episode 2 very much, or some things from it. But then episode 3 like really picked up again.
Episode 3 picks up. I like episode 2 because we get to the investigation. We get to the explore the crime scene, the evidence, we get into the nitty-gritty, and then obviously the show kind of gains momentum from there. I agree with you. Episode 3 dives deeper into the, I don't know what you want to call it, the spiritual side of the case.
Yeah, they're building that up. They're building that up. I thought episode 3 also, the dynamic between the two detectives starts getting better.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not like hating at each other and not talking to each other. They actually start working together now.
Yeah, and they're better on screen together too.
Exactly.
I also like that Peter kid. I just think
he's a good character. They keep calling him like a dork and stuff, but
yeah, but he's good.
But the big thing from episode 2 though, even though I had gripes, I didn't like it, what made up for everything is that they revealed the symbol.
Yeah, they got to a
famous symbol in episode 2, which links back to season 1 of True Detective. So it's the same symbol. It's the same occult symbol that's being used in these murders.
And did you pick up, I didn't pick this up during the show, I picked it up after doing some reading. This is, you know, no spoilers, this is episode 2. So the ghost, I can't remember his name, that is like was the old lady's husband, Rose's husband?
Yeah.
That guy.
Travis.
So he's Cole's dad from season 1, apparently. They have the same last name.
Yeah, so that was a big reveal too.
That was big. And then the company funding the project, the Salal project, is called Tuttle, which is also like the name of the governor or whatever from season 1.
Yeah, it's the name of the family involved in these ritualistic murders in season 1.
Yeah.
And who was doing this deep dive that you found? Or you just realized this, all these details?
If you,
I know the symbol, it automatically clicked with me. I remembered it. The stuff about the Tuttles, I didn't remember their last name, but once you see any article about
True Detective, super fans, bro,
it'll mention it.
Super fans come through right away, the night of, or the morning after. So it's cool. It's cool. Yeah. I always, shows like that, I always like to do a little bit of side reading after the fact, just because it sheds some light on these little details that I don't really pick up.
There's one shot in episode 3. Scott, you haven't seen it, but this isn't a spoiler. They're driving. They're like, it's like a long take where they're driving, the two detectives, and there's like a sunrise going on, but I thought there was supposed to be endless night.
It is supposed to be endless night.
So I haven't looked it up, but I'm not sure what that was about. There's no way that could have been like a mistaken shooting. I'm just thinking like maybe they get like sunrise for a little bit and then it just goes down right away and it's just night like 99% of the day over there.
I may have to go rewatch that.
Did the characters bring attention to that, or are they just
you just see it in the horizon while they're driving that there's like a sunrise happening and there's some light. It's not like pitch dark like it is throughout the show.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. I might have to look up more about what that's about.
Scott, you liking the show so far?
I am, but there's certain parts where I just go, that's too much.
Are you talking about the fact that they have the bodies thawing there all the time and they're just like talking around it like nothing?
Yeah.
And
it's in the shot.
That's getting to be too much to me.
And that one guy, you know, I guess he's the son who's like touching it. Like, why are you touching the bodies that are now melting? There's no need to touch them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been 3 episodes of the thawing bodies. They need to just put a wall around it or something, because there's people like using that gym and stuff.
Nah,
like normal town people.
It's done now. The thawing is done at this point, I think. So don't worry, Scott. But it's going to get weirder. Just understand. Yeah, a lot of cleanup on Monday.
I would not be happy. I would run over the surface about 2 or 3 extra times.
All right, main topic. We decided to watch Sexy Beast, which I didn't realize was a movie from the 2000s, to be honest. I had heard of it through an interview with Bill Hader, who was kind of like making fun of British accents, and he brought up that movie in a good way. He wasn't making fun of the movie. He was just making a comment on how like you'll understand 2 sentences and then just be lost for a while.
I had to watch it with subtitles.
So Sexy Beast is a new show on Paramount Plus, but it's also a prequel to a film that came out in the year 2000 with the same title. Sexy Beast the movie is about, Pedro, correct me if I'm wrong, it's about a retired gangster who's chilling, living his life in a villa in Spain with his wife. And I think his former gangster buddy, they're like neighbors. I don't know if that's ever made clear, but they seem to hang out, go to dinner, drink, hang out by the pool. When a former gangster decides to pop in, played by Ben Kingsley, for one last big, what do you call it? One last big...
Heist.
I kind of knew that going into the film, but I didn't understand and I didn't know that 75% of the film was going to take place in that villa and Ben Kingsley's character, Don, was just going to terrorize these people.
Yes.
So it was a real psychological treat, because there's this tension of an expectation of violence that never comes. But it's like at a 10 the whole time this guy shows up. And that's kind of the baseline for the movie. Other things happen beyond that. I won't spoil them, but it's pretty intense. And I did hear that Ben Kingsley was nominated for an Oscar for that performance.
I read that too.
Yeah.
There were 2 parts I thought was odd.
When One second, Scott, let me just cut you. Before
yes.
we get to that... There's a prequel now on Paramount Plus with these characters sort of this going through how they got to the point in the film. So before the film, what their lives were like. And we decided to watch both of these and then discuss them. I watched the show first, and that might have been a mistake.
That was ballsy of you.
Because it was 50 minutes. That's the only why. That's the only reason. Scott, what did you watch first?
I watched the show first as well. Because most of the time, the show is a very distant, based on type of storyline. It's sort of... Was the show a prequel?
Yes.
Of the movie? So that's why I watched first. I was trying to... wasn't trying to do a George Lucas thing where he makes you watch three movies and says, all right, now we're going to have you go back and then you're going to go forward and back. I wanted to beat that and watch the show first.
Pedro, you had watched the film long ago. You recommended it.
Yeah.
Did you revisit the movie or did you go straight into the show?
I did. I revisited the movie. And then I think I watched the pilot episode the following day. That's how I like to, when it comes to like prequels, that's how I like to do it. I like to see the original first. And I think anytime that, you know, something's considered like quote unquote a classic or an underground classic or like something that's just really, people have said it's something really good, it's always, by my opinion, good to watch, you know, what sets the bar first and then what comes second. Because nothing that comes out today is ever going to compare to anything of the originals, right? Not the Star Wars prequels, not any of this stuff.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult.
But yeah, I definitely had to revisit it. And, I haven't, like you said, I hadn't watched it in a few years and it definitely feels dated now. But this movie it's about the acting. It's about Ben Kingsley's intense just character.
He's a maniac.
It's one of his best performances, and just this build up towards, you know, you start off in this calm, serene Spanish villa, like you said, this guy's just sun tanning.
Yeah,
he's enjoying the weather. Next thing you know, a boulder comes crashing down into his pool, which is kind of like foreshadowing that this like force of nature is about to strike him.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
And then it just continuously builds up. It's a slow build. And then you get to like this heist at the end. That's this just amazing heist. I've never seen an underwater heist done before.
Right. But it's downplayed. I like the fact that the heist is not even secondary, it's tertiary to everything that's going on, because you have this, you know, psychopathic mobster in Don who shows up and he convinces Gal to go on this one last heist. But what happens then is Gal executes the heist and, you know, there's no hiccup, there's not a ton of drama in the heist itself because he goes and he just gets the job done. But when he tries to leave, there's another psychopath questioning him and grilling him, who's Teddy Bass, who's another mobster, who's the guy who hired him.
Yeah, he's kind of like one of the bosses of this criminal organization.
Yeah, so he goes from being in the water, metaphorically being in the water with a shark, to then being, once he frees himself, then he's like in a cage with a lion in the second part of the movie. And then finally he kind of, you know, he's allowed to get away back to his Spanish villa. But I thought it was immensely stressful, the whole movie, in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's psychological stress brought on by Don, Ben Kingsley's character. He's just upsetting the life that this guy, his wife, and his friend and his wife have, leading this quiet life. He just stirs things up. It all comes to like a fight, to a boiling point where they actually end up killing him because Gal, he's been refusing him, you know, but this guy isn't taking no for an answer to go back to London and do this job. And it results in him getting killed and Gal going back to London to do this job as one last job, you know, because that's it. You know, he's forced to do it. But coming back, It's like, it's not as easy to come back because you get there and they're asking him, hey, where's Don? This guy was sent over to recruit you. You're coming back without him.
Right.
Why is he no showing for this job? That's not like him. And that's when it gets into this other sort of cycle, like you said, Teddy Bass and his mental mind games with Gal.
And they play that really well against the audience, because they cut to Gal arriving in London and he's asked about Don. And he says, yeah, Don called me from Heathrow just to say he landed safely, so he's good. But no one knows where he is. And Teddy is saying, well, he never showed up. He never arrived. And my instinct in that moment was thinking, damn, Don stayed back in Spain and he's killing Gal's family and friends. Because he's a psychopath. I was like, this guy stayed back there. He set up Gal to kill those guys. But then they reveal what actually happened when they jump back to that scene. And it's like,
yeah, that was cool. That was cool. Cause it jumped. Yeah, you're right. I forgot. It jumps to him in London going there for the job, but it doesn't tell you what led to him.
How he got there.
Being convinced to go over there. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott, shoot.
I had trouble following the movie just because of the accents and everything was so subtle.
You fucking cunt.
Yeah. the C word was used a lot in this
movie. Yeah, a lot.
I was wondering when we would reach the point where we would do an explicit episode, and we finally reached that point.
We did.
You said the queen of all words, and we reached it.
It's said quite frequently in the film and in the series
too. Oh, it is, but you'll probably have to bleep it because
anyway,
our official bleep. Yes, I did not miss that word. I did not miss that.
But you had trouble with the accents.
Loud and clear.
I had trouble with the accents too.
But I didn't have trouble with that word. I heard that word loud and clear. But yes, I was. But then I was. The heist felt so subtle. It's like, oh, that's the heist. Okay.
You know, they spent a little time on the lead up and the setup, sort of kind of explaining a little bit or showing, not so much explaining, but at least showing you what the intent was, that they were going to rob this guy's bank. But you had no idea how they were going to do that, and you had no idea why they needed Gal to do it, which they did. But yeah, I think they probably spent about 20 minutes on that scene and like the setup and the execution before Gal, you know, dried off and walked off with the two priceless earrings or rings for his wife.
So just so you guys, just so people can understand how crazy Sir Ben Kingsley's performance was, there's trivia that's on IMDb that says reportedly the other actors were so stunned by the ferocity of Sir Ben Kingsley's performance that they occasionally forgot their lines, and much of the fear in their performances wasn't difficult to act.
Yeah. I was scared on my couch. I was like, especially for oh my God, H.
Gal's friend. He made me really uncomfortable.
So in comparing that to the show, Pedro, I'm curious, because you had already seen the film, you kind of knew about this character, Don. But what I like about the movie, too, is it puts you in these people's lives for 2 days, but it doesn't give you any background whatsoever, how they know each other, what happened in the past, are they in good terms, or like, why are they in bad terms, why are they so afraid of him, why is everything so intense? You get nothing of that. You get a little peek when he goes to London, but almost nothing. And going into the show, which is a prequel, they're at liberty to fill in all of those blanks. There was a couple of details in there in the movie that they played with, but they have the liberty to kind of do whatever they want now to make up this backstory. But I'm just curious, what did you guys think of the show in comparison and what it was trying to do?
I think the way this movie was made, that where it's sort of like it sort of all just takes place in this one house for like 80% of the movie. And it's really just about one thing. And it's this psycho terrorizing these people, trying to convince this guy to go back. it leaves it wide open to anything. And I think a prequel series is like the perfect way to continue on this franchise, sort of. I'm surprised it wasn't done before, mm-hmm. you know, that it took this long. But the good thing is that it leaves everything completely open to be told of how they got to that point in the movie. And sure, they're not friends, but, you know, maybe they were 10, 15 years ago when they were just starting out. And yeah, sure, Don isn't as crazy now, but you start seeing like these little hints at, you know, him starting to snap. Part of it is his abusive mother that's just like trying to propel him to become a bigger name in the criminal underworld and to like do more heists and stuff. And she's just like verbally abusing him the whole first episode. Anytime we see her on screen.
I think that's his sister.
Oh, is it his sister? Okay.
Yeah. The blonde woman.
Yes, the older woman in the...
Yeah, that's his older sister.
Sort of like casino bar type thing.
Yeah.
And then you kind of... There was a scene where you see them... They're like hanging out at a nightclub with some friends. And you see like he's kind of like socially awkward. The girls are kind of like laughing at him. So you start seeing like him getting frustrated. And, you know, that's like a little remnant of the movie. But... You know, like I said, nothing modern is ever going to be as good as the original. Ben Kingsley's performance is untouchable. So it's like no matter how good of a job this guy does playing a young Don, he's never going to reach that point. But it's building right. up. It's building up. And, yeah, I mean, it's not like an amazing show. It's not a great thing. But I'm going to check out episode two. I'll probably check out episode three if it's really... not leading anywhere. It's nothing I'm dying to keep watching, you know?
Mm-hmm. Scott, what do you think? What did you think about these two merging worlds? And obviously they're different creators and everything.
It felt like a completely different story to me. Well, it felt, you know, the beginning, I thought there was a variety of how they started it, because both start with someone sitting out on a white background.
It's the same open, yeah.
It's the same open. So one, actually, the series starts with someone on a rooftop, but the movie starts out with a guy sitting in a chair, but he's actually on a white, you know,
is that police poolside
patio of the poolside. And that one random kid, which I didn't mention, like what was with that kid constantly in the movie there, and he doesn't really say anything.
Well, the pilot episode starts as it's sort of like a tribute to the movie, because it starts yes. off with him like sunbathing on right. this, like you said, but it's like a roof, but it's in London instead of like in Spain. So
yeah, yeah, there's a lot of that. I thought I didn't love the show. I thought. And it's hard to create a show, you know, when the original is such a unique kind of story. It's really character story. It's a story about these characters. And I just thought the show as a whole, like, had no subtlety whatsoever. Everyone is, like, super badass. And anytime there's... a badass is in the scene, there's this like crazy rock music driving the scene. I just thought nothing was handled really gently, and that's common for stuff today. Especially when you contrast it to the movie, which is all subtlety. It's all the acting. There's nothing bombastic happening. There's no showmanship, really.
I agree, yeah.
And then...
Which is the exact opposite of what a prequel should be like, because the movie itself pretty much was so light on music where there almost wasn't any music. And then this show, it's like they don't have a second where there isn't music. So it's a prequel, but done as a present day series.
Yeah, I think they rely, and this again, this goes to a lot of shows today. They rely on music to convey what the actors or what the characters might be feeling, or to, you know, communicate to the viewers what they should be feeling, regardless of what the scene is kind of calling for, where the movie, is a bit more raw in that sense, and the characters will carry that emotion for you, and you sort of understand it. Now, that's, it's not easy to do, but...
But if the acting's really great and the writing's really good, you don't need the music to substitute for what's missing.
Yeah. And then I just felt like all the characters came together way too soon. I wish that they were a bit more patient in at least introducing Gal to Dee Dee or introducing the gang to Teddy. Like, all that happens in episode one. And I was like, so every character from the movie is right here already. And like, we got there already. We're already there. So I wish they would have stretched that out over season one, where maybe they do these jobs and then, you know, they can find out inadvertently that they've been working for Teddy the whole time, but they don't meet him right away. They meet him later. So it kind of, you know, it develops this, you know, suspense about like the big bad boss a little bit, and maybe stretch out the romance with Dee Dee, because they do go into her story right away, like full blown as well. So, you know, I wish that stuff was a little different. And yeah, in general, I just feel like it's too polished.
Yeah, one of the first things I noticed was I'm like, you know, this could have used like a little more of a vintage look to it.
Yeah. Yeah, everything looks very clean.
And then, yeah, it would have been cool to see like sort of each character's story on their own. And then like they eventually meet up and, you know, become friends or whatever.
Yeah. I do like Gal's actor a lot. I feel like he's great. And I think the guy who plays Don is also good, you know, because he was, look, when you're asked to play Don from Kingsley, that's tough, but he's able to do it in a way that's a little bit more tame, implying that he's not there yet, you know, at that level. He's not as confident all the time, and he still looks up to Gal in many ways. And hopefully they keep that dynamic interesting and don't go, like, in episode two or three, like, full Don, you know, which they might do.
Were you guys able to tell right away which character was which, like, without even them saying the name? Because they look exactly like what they're supposed to look like.
Yeah. So I watched the first episode first, so I knew the characters. But when... Yeah, when I saw Gal in the pool in the movie, I was like, okay, this is... I mean, it was shot for shot, number one, so they don't really make it tough. But when I saw H in the movie, I was just like, oh my God, I hope that's H. And it was, so I was like, I don't know, I like that. I like that all the characters are there. I just wish they didn't, like, throw it in my face right away, you know? But I did like it. I think the movie is on a different level, but, you know, if you have to build a series around it, you know, I think it's tough. But... I think it's okay.
Yeah.
So would you recommend people give it a watch?
100%. Yeah. The movie, definitely. The movie you got to watch. That's a classic. The show, it's up to you. If you want to see a little more, you know, see where how things got to the way they are. But, you know, like we've all agreed, like this movie is kind of unique in the way that it's just puts you in this space and time. And it's just this glimpse at these characters.
Yeah.
That was the original director's like intention, you know?
It's no more, no less, no flashbacks, no, oh, do you remember when we used to do this? There's none of that. It's just very much in the moment that you get a glimpse into these guys' lives. I do want to mention, surprised to hear that Jonathan Glazer directed the movie. He also directed Zone of Enders, which is out now.
This was his directorial debut.
I just learned
he did Zone of Interest, right? That's his interest.
Yes, movie. Sorry, not Zone of Enders. That's a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, I like him as a director. I watched a couple of his films. They're all great. Under the Skin.
That's Scarlett the one. Johansson. That movie's phenomenal.
I believe he did Men, which came out 2 or 3 years ago on A24. Also, another crazy ass movie.
Oh, that's him.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
I believe that was him too.
That movie was scary.
But yeah, he's awesome. And he started off as a music video director.
Oh, I didn't know that.
If you check out his music video works, they're all like these like groundbreaking videos from the 90s and stuff. He did a lot of electronic music videos. But yeah, this was like his first shot at the big screen, and you know, he came out with something completely different from left field. So I think that's what made him, got him on the everyone's
on radar,
director's list, everyone's radar.
His career has been pretty quiet, but it's all hits. I want to quickly mention, I was just curious, I always check out the Rotten Tomato on the stuff that we watch. The show has a critics average of 36 and an audience average of 40. It's like people are not feeling the show.
Ooh, that's rough. So it's unanimous. It's the audience score and the tomato meter.
Yeah.
So how is that? So I wonder how many people are going to subscribe to Paramount Plus just because of the series. Probably not.
Oh, probably nobody.
I mean, I think Paramount Plus has yet to really have that hit that sets them over the bar, right?
It got me get that free trial.
I mean, it's got Good Burger too, but
I know.
Good Burger too. Scott, drop your quick Good Burger 2 review.
You know what? I have one thing to say. Give Good Burger back.
That's all I want.
Good Burger back.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Give Good